for Rafua Shalema. Tonight's learning is dedicated to Nishmas Avram Yitzchak Ben Yaakov, as well as for Rafua Shalema to Chaim Yeshua Ben Moshe Hendel, and Chaim Yeshua Ben Hendel, and Chaim Yitzchak Moshe Ben Esther Reza. This week's parasha, we have the privilege of studying Parashas Bo'i. And Parashas Bo'i is a jam-packed parasha, like many of the parashas are in Sefer Shemois. We'll first mention a quick overview of the parasha, then we'll get into some of the details that are found in the pages of this week's parasha. So the quick overview of this week's parasha is that, if you remember, we're holding now where we're in the middle of the Eser Makos. Parashas Ve'era, we had the first seven of the ten Makos. And this week's parasha, we're going to have the last of the three Makos. We are also going to have a couple of important mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Karban Pesach, the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, we're going to have Pidyon HaBen, we're going to talk about Tefillin, we're going to have the epic event of Yetzias Mitzrayim, an event that we recall and remember so many times throughout our day, so many times throughout our life, on Shabbos, Yom Tov. It's a continuous message that's over and over and over, continuously repeated. And then we're going to have the Bnei Yisrael journeying in the Midbar, en route to get to Torah, and really en route to get to Eretz Yisrael as well. But it's really a big deal, this week's parash, because this is the week where the Bnei Yisrael are finally freed. After hundreds of years of avdus, after hundreds of years of being controlled, and being avadim, and being slaves, being non-free people, we are finally freed of the upper hand of Mitzrayim, and we're able to be free people. It's not a small thing. A person cannot be a real Oved Hashem if he's an Eved. We can only be an Eved LaHashem. We can't be an Eved to another person. We need to be able to be free. If you're an Eved, you can't go to Minyan whenever you want. If you're an Eved, you can't go to Daf Yomi Shir whenever you want. So the idea of being free is not a small thing, and it's something that we as Bnei Yisrael continuously appreciate and continuously remind ourselves of being freed, not by a outside leader, but by being freed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore becoming His people, and therefore having a very special relationship with Him. That's an overview of the parasha. Now let's get into the parasha slowly. So the name of this week's parasha, we all know, is Parashas Bo'i. There's an interesting Balaturim. The Balaturim says that how are you supposed to remember if you're in school, and they ask you, well, how many makas were in Parashas Ve'era, and how many makas were in Parashas Bo'i? So the Balaturim says there's a great way to remember. The word Bo'i is Beis Aleph. Beis Aleph is three, two and one, Beis and Aleph. Three, says the Baal HaTurim, is Gematria, Bo'i is three. Three Makkas took place in Parashas Bo'i. So explains the Baal HaTurim. Now the question is there a deeper connection to the three? I'm doing it right now. Is there a deeper connection to the three, to the three Makkos in this week's Parasha than just the fact that they happen to be the last three? So it's amazing, talk about Hashgacha Pratis. Right before I was preparing the shiur, someone sent me a recording from Rabbi Shmuel Greenberg. Rabbi Shmuel Greenberg is a Rebbe in one of the yeshivas here. He's a Rav also. He was never sick for many, many months with corona. And then he got pneumonia. But he just sent out a recording that he's doing better. And he wanted to share with everyone a Vart on the Parsha. And I was listening to the Vart on the Parsha. And he asks this kasha. He asks, what exactly is the specialty of these three makas that are lumped together? What is the theme that these three makas are put together? And he wanted to suggest the following idea. He wanted to suggest that all three of these makas have one common denominator. And what's the common denominator, he explained? He said, because by Arba, the Pasuk says that the Arba covered the floor, and you couldn't see the floor. So that was an element of darkness. Choshech is the greatest darkness. Makas Bechoris was when a person dies, his light goes out. So Rabbi Greenberg wanted to explain, and I guess saying this in his name should be a schos for Rafua Shleima, that he still needs to get back to himself. He was in the hospital for many months, quite sick with corona, and Baruch Hashem, it seems like he has turned the corner and he's in the right direction. He said he's in rehab, but again, he continuously needs Rafua Shleima, so this should be a schos for him. So he explained that Klal Yisrael needed to learn a message of the darkness of the Mitzri lifestyle. The Jewish people needed to learn that we want to get away from the darkness of the Mitzrayim lifestyle. We live in a world today where the outside world, the non-Jewish culture, is really not a life. It's not a light. It's really a darkness. Many of the Goyim don't have much meaning in their life. They don't have purpose in their life. They're always looking for the next pleasure. They're always looking for the next thing that's going to give them pleasure. As the Yidden left Mitzrayim, they needed to remind themselves of the darkness of the Mitzrayim, of the Egyptian culture, and to appreciate the light of Torah. And that's why he said, that's why we have right after that the mitzvah, Chodesh Ezel Lechem, the moon shines in the sky, gives off a light of Judaism, a light of Torah, a light of purpose, a light of meaning. It's a very different experience. The type of light that we have is Yidden. I was talking to a friend of mine. He was telling me that he was talking to his workers, people he worked with, and they were discussing, what would they do if they won the lottery? So they all said they'd quit. So he said, but what are you going to do all day? I will figure out what to do. So this fellow told me, he said, hey, you know, if he'd won the lottery, he'd go to learn. Spend his day learning Torah, doing chesed. We have purpose, we have meaning, we have a reason to live, a purpose, and what to accomplish in our life. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains that the common denominator between these three makas was another wake-up call to Paray. Arbek came with the wind. Paray was showing, Hashem was showing Paray, I control the winds. Choshech, he was showing Hashem, look, I control the sun and the moon. And Makas Becheres, he was showing that I control life and death. That was the power of the last three Makas. The powwow of the last three Makas was, look, Paray, I control everything. I control the winds. I control the stars in the sky. And I control, perhaps the most important thing, life and death. So everything Hashem is showing is from HaKadosh Baruch. But it's an interesting choice of words that Paray uses, that Hashem uses to Moshe. What does boy mean? Come. Come to Paray. Let me come to Paray. Lech le Paray. Go to Paray. Why does he choose the word boy? So the simple answer is because the word lech wouldn't be gematria 3. Boy is gematria 3, so he said the word boy. But that's probably not the pshat. So what does he want with the word boy? So the Mefarshim explain that Hashem was telling Moshe Rabbeinu, boy, come to me. We're going to go together to Paray. I'm not sending you alone into the lion's den to be by yourself. Boy, come to me and you together, me, Kavi Ochel, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashem and Moshe will go together to deal with Paray. Why, says Hashem? Ki ani echbadati es liboy ves lev avadov, because I harden the hearts of Paray and his slaves. So the Rishonim ask Akash, the Chizkuni and others, why is Hashem telling this to Moshe Rabbeinu? Why is it important for Moshe Rabbeinu to know this? So the Rishonim answer, because in last week's parasha, we basically had Paray. Paray was on his knees. Paray was basically all in on letting the Bnei Yisrael go free. He admits, he agrees, and all of a sudden he changes his mind. So Moshe Rabbeinu was at a loss. Moshe Rabbeinu was like, what's going on over here? So Hashem says, let me explain to you. I played games with Paray. I made his heart hard. I made things difficult for him. So you should just have a background understanding of what's going on. And that's why he's not going to be so convinced when you go to him. But the Kliyoker points out, this is the first time we see that the hearts of the Avadim are also hardened. Not only did Hashem harden the heart of Paray, but he also hardened the heart of his Avadim. Because very often, even the greatest leaders, the biggest dictators, at times will listen to their advisors. And if their advisors tell them that this is a bad idea, they will often listen and concede to their advisors. So therefore, Paray, in this situation, was told that even your Avadim were not going to listen because they had Chveda Salef. But what can we learn from this whole theme of Paray's Chveda Salef, Paray's heart is hardened? Sir Pshach, the great Panovich Rosh Hashiva points out that most of us look at Paray as a fool. Some idiot. The guy's crazy. What's he doing? So Abshach says, no, the lesson of Paray is that Hashem took away his ability to think clearly. And we have to appreciate what it does mean to have the ability to think clearly. It comes from Hashem. When we make a conscious, coherent thought in our mind, it's a gift from Hashem. And there are Nebuch people that can't make those thoughts because Hashem didn't give them the power. Hashem took away the power of Paray to make coherent decisions. And we need to appreciate what does it mean that we can get up in the morning and make a decision, a clear thinking thought process, whether it be in our work, whether it be in our family life, whether it be, you know, to cross the street or not to cross the street, at the light or not. These are all decisions that we make consciously, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us to us. That's what happens when a person gets drunk. He doesn't make these good decisions. He doesn't time how much room he has between him and the car. He doesn't think, is it a good idea to do something dangerous? These are all koichos that Hashem gave to us, and Hashem took it away from Paray. So we need to appreciate the ability to be able to think, the ability to be able to have a thought process, and to be able to make good, hopefully good, and correct decisions. So what does Hashem tell Moshe? Ki ani echbadi esli boy veslev avadov. I made their hearts hard. Why? Leman shisi oisesai ilibikim. Because I want to play with him. I want to show them around. I want to show them all my miracles. Why? Well, leman tisaper. So in order you should speak, say over, biaznei bincha, in the ears of your son, uben bincha, in the ears of your grandson. all that I did here in Mitzrayim, and all the miracles that I put here, and you will know that I am Hashem. So the obvious question is, from a grammatic standpoint, the pasuk doesn't flow. Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to tell over to your children everything that happened. So what does it mean? So in order that they should know that I am Hashem. If we were writing the pasuk, we would have wrote that you should tell over to your children and the grandchildren all the miracles. Why? The Yadu'u, and they will know, ki ani Hashem. But it says, V'yidatem, you should know. So are we talking to the parents? Are we talking to the children? So the great Belz the Rebbe, the Sar Sholem Belz, explained that when you tell your children and grandchildren what a great Hashem is, you will have a better Yerushalayim. When you tell over to the next generation the miracles and the greatness of Hashem, forget about them being bigger Yerushalayim. The Yidatem, and you will know. Your Yerushalayim will be strengthened, said the Belz the Rebbe. When you give over, when you teach, and when you infuse into the next generation, you will be a better God-fearing Jew. Not just your grandchildren, you will know Hashem better. Another thought that the Mefarshim point out, I think the Rosh Sternberg says this, is that unless you feel it, you can't give it over. You're going to tell your children and the grandchildren about all the miracles of Hashem, but deep down in your hearts, you don't believe it. In order for the children to hear it in a way that it means anything, it's v'yidatem, you have to believe it also. You also have to know it. Because if you don't know it, and you don't feel it, and you don't mean it, you can't give over to the next generation. The Chavetz Chaim said, that's pshat in the Pasuk. We say in Kriya Shema, v'hoyu advarim ha'el al-vavecha, if the words go into your heart, and you believe it, then v'shinantam lovanecha, then you can teach your kids. You can't teach your kids something that you don't believe. You can't give over to your children ideologies and hashkafas chaim that you don't live by. How can you give it over to them? If you believe it and you live it and you feel it and it's in your heart, then you can give it over to the children. Therefore, Zakta Pasuk, when it will be Lamanta Saper Vidatem, and you know it. If you feel it and you believe it, then you'll have success in giving it over to the next generation. The Chidah points out a beautiful idea over here, and I love to speak about the grandparent-grandchildren relationship. Baruch Hashem, many of our listeners here are grandparents, many of our listeners are grandchildren. But we should all be zeichet to be grandparents and great, 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 and many, many dairis. But there's a beautiful lesson over here from the Chidah. The Chidah points out, we've quoted this Gemara many times. The Gemara says if you have three generations of people learning Torah, it's a haftocha that the Torah will continue for more generations. If you have three generations, grandpa, son, and grandson learning Torah, that's a haftocha that the Torah will stay in that family. But Tosfos says there's one condition. It has to be that they see each other. I don't know if Zoom counts. I'm not sure if Zoom counts. But they have to see each other. Zok techidah, that's pshat in this pasuk. L'mat tesaper, you have to say it over in their ear. They got to see you. Then if you give it over from dar, three generations, where they see each other, where there's a interaction between the grandparents and the grandchildren, then v'yidatem k'ani Hashem, then I know that they'll be God-fearing Jews forever. Beautiful avtocha that the chidah says, the chazal tell us, that if there's interaction between the three generations. Again, we mentioned many times from Rabbi Soloveitchik how he used to speak about the importance of the generation gap, that there has to be a continuation of generation to generation. We have to continue giving over to our children and to our grandchildren. There can't be this generation gap where people say, nah, I can't talk to grandpa, I can't talk to granddad, or Zaidi, Safta, whatever you call him. He's not cool, he's not with it, he doesn't get my world. No, grandparents have to try their best to connect to their grandchildren and give over the Mesiris HaTorah. I mentioned this last year on Parashas Ve'era, but it's worth mentioning again, a beautiful svarna in last week's Parasha. The Reb Henoch Leibowitz points out that why was Amram Zoicha to be the great Amram? Amram was the Gadol Ador, and he produced fantastic children. All of us would die to have children like Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Three for three, knockout out of the park children. What was his chus? So the svarna writes, you know what made Amram so special? Because Amram learned with his grandfather Levi. Because Levi and Amram spend time together. When you spend time with your grandchildren, not only your grandchildren be better, their children will be better. It's a beautiful concept. Baruch Hashem, grandparents today are getting younger and younger, and great-grandparents are even younger now. So really less of an excuse, and because of technology, we have so many ways to be able to connect to the generation. We have Zoom, and we have this, that, and the other. We need to take these opportunities to connect to the next generation. It's not just for them, but it's for the future, it's for your legacy. You can produce great-grandchildren that are going to be knockout great-grandchildren if you spend the time focusing with the grandchildren now. Beautiful idea that comes up in this week's parasha. Okay, so Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, listen guys, I got big plans over here. But if you notice, he never once told the Bnei Yisrael, he never once told Moshe what the next Makkah is. He never said, oh, by the way, Moshe, and the next Makkah is Arba. He never said that. And the next Pasuk, Vayavi Moshe the Aaron al Pari. Moshe and Aaron come to Pari. How on earth did Moshe and Aaron know? How do they know Arba was the next Makkah? We show the masters Kasha, Kliok, or others, and they say maybe you'll tell me that Moshe Rabbeinu knew all the Makkahs because he had on the stick. It said the Tzachadash Machab. Fine. So why do you have to? Why did Hashem tell him any of the Makkahs? So the simple answer the Mefarshim say is because it said that this Makkah is going to be Lamata Saper Basnei Bin Cho Ben Bin Cho. This Makkah is going to be talked about for future generations. And since Arba was the Achra of Lo Yekamayu, there was no Makkah like Arba. So he figured that this must be the Makkah that Hashem was talking about, even though Hashem never said it explicitly. So what does the Pasuk say? How does the Torah describe Arba? L'chiso es ein ha'aretz, it will cover the eye of the land. V'lo yuchal l'rois es ha'aretz. You won't be able to see the ground. So the Mefarshim point out, I heard this pshat once many years ago, that was part of the Makkah. Human tendency is we like to be able to see the ground that we walk on. If we can't see the ground that we walk on, psychologically, it stresses us out. Right? Speak to people who live in communities where there's a lot of snow. My father told me he grew up in Connecticut as a kid. He said for half the year, there was snow on the ground. That was just part of your reality. It's what you get used to. But it's not enjoyable. You like to be able to walk on flat surface. You don't want to walk on ice and snow. You don't want to walk on something else. So that was part of the Makkah of Allah. Yuchal l'rois ha'aretz. They couldn't see the ground. Psychologically, it stressed them out. Not being able to see the ground. Then what happens? Not only that, it destroyed the leftover crops. This was a disaster. What happens at the end of the pasuk? Moshe just leaves. Abrupt leaves after declaring what the Makkah is going to bring. He doesn't even wait for a rebuttal from Paro. He just leaves. Points out Rav Pam. There's an important message over here. Says Rav Pam, there's an important message from what Moshe Rabbeinu did with Paro. He comes to Paro and he tells Paro, listen Paro, I got a heavy duty Makkah coming down. This is going to be Arba, this is going to rock your world, this is going to be you, this, that, and the other. And he says, okay, bye. So Rav Pam points out that sometimes in life, you can't stuff something down someone's throat. You know, you can't keep on going over and beating them with the dead horse and over and over and over. Here's the information. Now you'll be a big boy. Sometimes it's very good like that with either spouses or children. You can't always, they don't always want to be told what to do. But if you inform them, listen, if you do X and Y, this will happen. Now you make your decision. Instead of stuffing it down their throat and forcing them and making them have to listen to you, just present them. Say, listen, this is what the story is. Make a wise decision. And that's where Pam says what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Paro. Listen, Paro, I'm not going to scare you. I'm not going to, you know, stuff it down your throat. I'm not going to put you up against the wall. This is the information. You do what you want with it. And then Rav Pam points out another observation. Says Rav Pam, there's another message over here. Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, listen, Paro, your avodim, your people, your cabinet is with you. Maybe your cabinet can convince you to do the right thing. As we spoke about before, the importance of having people around you to help you make decisions. So he was hoping that his board, his cabinet would help him, and that's exactly what happens. We'll see later on. His cabinet, Vayemru Avdei Paro Lov, the cabinet tells him, listen, Paro, this is getting ridiculous already. Ad Mosa Yezan Olam Kesh. You know, we lost. Right? At some point, even the greatest people have to admit that they lost. And I think Donald Trump is still grappling with this today, specifically today, with the fact that he lost the election. And many of the people in his closest inner circle, which is his daughter and son-in-law, are often reminding him, this is the story, this is what you need to do, this is what you don't need to do. So sometimes even the biggest leaders, the greatest leaders, they do listen to their inner core circle of people that they trust. And that's what happened over there. The Avadim say, listen, Paro, the game's over. It's over. You gotta throw the towel. You gotta concede and give up. But the Pasuk tells us what happens next. Vayushavis Moshe v'Aaron al Paro. They bring Moshe and Aaron back. Paro says, fine, go serve. Miva miya hoichim, who is going? So there's a beautiful Balaturim, which I always found hard to understand. The Balaturim writes that Paro was a big Lamdin. Why was Paro a big Lamdin? Pari says to Moshe, I don't get what you keep on hacking me at Chaynik about the Jewish people leaving. Where do you think you're going? You think you're going into Eretz Yisrael? Says the Balatur, Miva Mi Aholchim. Who's going into Eretz Yisrael? You're all going to die in the desert. I know in the future what's going to happen. And he says, Miva Mi Aholchim is Gematria Kolev Uben Nun. So Pari was tiny to Moshe. What are you making me such a big deal? Who's going into? None of you are going into Eretz Yisrael. Miva Mi Aholchim is just Yeshua and Kalev. Stop making such a big deal. So on that, Moshe Rabbeinu answers him, no, Binurenu Viskeinenu. The youth under 20 and the men older 60 also going to go into Eretz Yisrael. So it's not true. It's an unbelievable Balaturim that Pari knew all this and was tiny back. And then I think it'd be, and then Abraham Kanevsky adds to it. Bivanenu, Bivnoisenu, our children, meaning referring to Shevet Levi, because Shevet Levi wasn't in the Chet Egel, all Shtikal Torah. But this is amazing that that's what Pari was thinking, that Pari was having a Lomdusha Machloikis with Moshe. He knew that in the future they're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he's arguing who needs to go, and me, Vami is Gematria, Yeshua, Bin Nun, Vikalev. Okay? As I said to Balaturim, it's a fascinating, fascinating idea. But what happens, Vaiter? So Pari wants to know who needs to go. Moshe tells him, "Binurenu v'skenenu nilach." With our youth and with our elderly, we're going to go. So, according to the Balaturim, Moshe's answer was, "The youth and the elderly are going to actually go into Eretz Yisrael because they were not part of Chet Egel." Bivanenu, bivnoisenu, our sons and our daughters. Again, according to the Reb Chaim Kanevsky, this means the children of Shevet Levi. Bitzenenu v'vkerenu nilach. We're going to go with our animals. Kichag Hashem lonu, because it's a holiday for Hashem. I think they quote b'shem b'shul leib diskin. That the Tzenenu Vivkarenu is the ones that are going to carry the Bivnenenu Bivnesenu. We're bringing our daughters and children, someone's got to carry them. They can't walk. They can't walk our long trip, so we need the Tzenenu Vivkarenu to carry the Bivnenu Uvivnesenu. Rav Moshe Bick points out in the Sefer Chaim Moshe that if you have to ask yourself an interesting question, who is the bulk main people of Klal Yisrael? Who would you vote as the main soldiers in the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Bick says, initially I would have thought the elderly. Why? Because they have much more time. They're not running around with working. They're not busy with their children. They're retired. They have much more free time. Their Yetzer Hara is somewhat surpassed. Not completely, but they have much less taiva than they did when they were younger. Yaakov Kamenetsky once said, Gevalda Gevart, he said that, you know, when he got older, he said he had less taiva for, let's say, other things, for, I guess, like nyoni women, whatever that means, Yaakov Kamenetsky. But he said, when he gets older, he had a new taiva. He said a taiva for COVID. So Yaakov said about himself. So I don't mean to say that when people get older, they lose all taivas, but the taivas switch. So Zotim Moshe Bik, if I had to ask you who's the best people to serve Hashem, says Rav Bik, it should be the Zakenu. They're so much more practically available. They have the time. They have the flexibility of their schedule. They're not running to a job. They're not running to carpool. Their taiva is not so strong. So they should be the front runners. They should be the representation of Klal Yisrael. Says Rav Moshe Bick, that's not what Hashem says. Hashem says, Binurenu, I want the youth. I want the guy that's struggling to find time to learn during the day. I want the guy that's balancing a job and his kids and his tuition and his mortgage. That's the guy that I value, says Rav Moshe Bick. Not the guy that has it easy. Not the guy that has less obligations on. Is that I want the young guy, the guy that's trying to survive, make a parnasa, and find time to learn at the end of the day. A very powerful idea from Rav Moshe Bick. But the other idea over here is the importance given of the youth. We all know the children are our future. It's not just a line, but it's a reality. The children are the future of Klal Yisrael. The way we raise our children and the chinuch that we give them will change the outlook of Klal Yisrael. There's no doubt. The children, the nureinu, the youth, the importance, the emphasis, the energy that we put into the youth is going to produce a different generation. So yes, the zakeinenu are very important. And I am a very big believer that we have to show respect and honor. The Torah says you have to respect our elders. We have to learn from our zakeinim. We have to take advice from our zakeinim. But who's going to be the face of Klal Yisrael? Who's going to be the future of Klal Yisrael? It's not going to be the zakeinenu. It's going to be the nureinu, the youth. Our children that we're raising is the future. They are going to be the future leaders. I always tell my Talmidim, I said, you guys are the future Gedolim of Klal Yisrael. That's the reality. You are the next generation. The previous generation will not be here. 75 years from now is going to be a whole new face of Klal Yisrael. We're not going to have the same Gedolim. This is the chance to be the face, to be the new appearance of Klal Yisrael. And therefore the Torah gives the emphasis of Binurenu and then Uvizkenin. So what happens? V'yomer aleihem kichag Hashem lanu. Another idea over here, Rabbi Say, it's worth mentioning. There happens to be machloikis rishayim. What holiday was Hashem was Moshe referring to? Kichag Hashem lanu was either Sukkot or Shavuos. But one of the Mefarshim point out over here that the way Jews celebrate a holiday is with family. We don't have a Yom Tov by ourselves. You know, in the Goyish world, you know, they have holidays. Some of them are family holidays. Some of them are not family holidays. Someone once was Masbir to me, December 25th is the family holiday. January 1st is, you know, for the adults. The kids go to bed. It's really just for the adults. We in Yiddishkeit don't have such holidays. Every holiday is Binareinu, Vizkenenu, Bivenenu, Vivnesenu. We celebrate with the elderly. We celebrate with our children. Every holiday, Kichag HaShemonu, what's a holiday for Klal Yisrael? What's a Yom Tov? Yom Tov is all of us being together. People going to their grandchildren and grandchildren going to their grandparents and three generations getting together. That's a Yom Tov. That's why it was probably the hardest thing for us as a nation last Pesach when we couldn't have a starim together with grandparents and in-laws and children. That was the epitome of family time is the Lel Seder. Lamantin Saper, when did we sit around the table and share stories about Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's Lel Pesach. So we all get together, we gather as a family and we share and we talk and we grow. And that was taken away from us because of COVID. And Mirtz Hashem, with Hashem's help, Mirtz Hashem, it looks like this year Pesach, Bli Ayin Hara, we should be able to get back together with family, assuming everyone stays safe and we get vaccinated as soon as humanly possible. But that was a big element of who we are. Our Yomim Toivim are events that we share together with family. And when we couldn't share together with family, it took away a little bit of the Yom Tov. Yom Toivim are not just us with our immediate family. It's an extended family experience. We invite our children in the back, and our married children, and our grandchildren, and great-grandchildren if we're so lucky. We invite extended family, because that's a Yom Tov. Ki Chag Hashem Lanu, a Jewish holiday, is not alone. It's spent with family. So what happens? Vayemer aleihem yikein Hashem. Fine. He says, no, loichein. Pari says, no, I don't agree to this whole shtigol Torah. L'chunu ha-givorim, let the men go. V'yivdu es Hashem. Ki oisa atem v'vakshim. Pari didn't agree. Pari thought this is a men's thing. He didn't realize the role of women, the role of Bivnenu, Bivnesenu. And that's how him and Moshe part. So then the Torah tells us, okay, Hashem tells Moshe, let's bring it on. I want you to stretch your hand on the land of Mitzrayim. Bo'arbe. Very funny pasuk. Stretch your hand on Mitzrayim, bo'arbe, with arbe. So Rashi already explains, you should do it because of arbe. That's why you should stretch out your hand. And we're going to have the Makkah of Barad. And the Pasuk says, the wind brought in the Arba, Vayala Harba Akolas Mitzrayim, and the Arba went on all of the land Mitzrayim, Vayonach, and it rested. So the Baal HaTurim tells us there's one other place in the Torah where we find the word Vayonach, and that's Vayonach Vayem HaShvi, Zok the Baal HaTurim, the Arba rested on Shabbos. I'll leave you to figure out, or maybe discuss at your Shabbos table, what does that have to do with anything? That the Arba rested on Shabbos, what does that have to do with anything? But as Zok the Baal HaTurim. Okay? Now, Yichasas in Eretz, it covers the entire land, and nothing was left over from this Makkah. So right away, like all the other Makkahs, Parai on cue, calls Moshe back. Moshe! I'm guilty, I sinned. Let's go through the whole shebang again. But it's interesting, Loshen over here. He says, he asks Moshe, please get rid of this death. Mavis is a death. Why was Arba called death? The Arba didn't kill anyone. So Reb Steinman explains simply, because since it ate all of the food that was left, you're going to die if you have no food. That's one pshat. Moshe Sternberg says because the Arba poked at people's eyes and they became blind. And we know Sumo Choshev Kemes. So that's why it's called a Mavis. That's why Arba is referred to as a Mavis. So Hashem does the same thing. He brings in another wind, gets rid of the grasshoppers, and we're on to Makkah number 9. Makkah's Choshech is a very, very important Makkah, in my humble opinion. Much to learn from it in the modern world where we live in right now. So Hashem tells Moshe, again, it's interesting. Again, here there's no warning. The Rashbam in last week's parasha makes this cheshbon that not every makkah got a hasra. Some makkahs did, some makkahs didn't. This one didn't get a hasra. So what does Hashem say to Moshe? The teyot chal shemayim, stretch your hand on the heaven. V'chushich al eretz Mitzrayim. We're going to have chushich. What's this chushich? There'll be darkness 3 days. Le'ra'u ish es achiv. A person will not see his friend, his brother. You'll not be able to stand up. But in the Jewish land, there will be light. So there's an amazing Rashi over here. Rashi asks a kash, according from a medrash. Correct Rashi. Now before we see Rashi, it's worth mentioning the medrash. The medrash says, what's the midah keneged midah of choshech? So Rashi says a fascinating medrash. The medrash says that when the Mitzrayim used to dine out in the restaurants, and they wanted to have light, so they used to make a Jew sit with a candle on top of his head. That was the way the lighting in the Egyptian restaurants was, a Jew with a candle on his head while the Mitzri couple dined. So therefore, says the medrash, that's the midah keneged midah. You tried to make the Jews be your source of light, so we're going to take away your source of light. But Rashi asks a kasha from the Medrash, which is a very, very interesting kasha. Frekt Rashi, v'lomo hevi aleihem choshech. Rashi wants to know, why did Hashem bring the makkah of choshech? So what's the obvious kasha of Rashi? Rashi, where were you for the last 8 makkahs? This is not the first makkah we had. We had 8 previous makkahs. You never once asked me why. So I think, if I remember correctly, one of the terutzim that are given is that this was the first one that was an extreme shinei hateva. Right? This is, again, it says in the pasuk, "Va'yi'or va'yivayker," is supposed to split up the day, light and dark. And here we're just going straight dark. So this was a unbelievable shinei hateva, a significant change in the way the world is structured, the way the world was supposed to run. And therefore, Rashi has the kasha, why did Hashem do it? But again, a great question for table talk of your Shabbos: why does Rashi only ask it here? But what does Rashi answer? So Rashi, shall you be Yisrael by Sa'ador Rishayim? Says Rashi, make no mistake. During the times of Mitzrayim, there were Jews that were evil. They did not want to leave Mitzrayim. Umeisu b'shloishis yimei afel, and they died during these 3 days of darkness. Kedei shelo yiru Mitzrayim b'malpaltam. So the Mitzrayim shouldn't see this. B'yoyim when they'll say, af hein loiki in kamonu, they also died like us. Says Rashi, you should know there was a group of Jews, not such a small group, a large group, 4/5 group. We'll learn in next week's parasha of the Chamushim. Rashi says only 1/5 of the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. That means 4/5 died in Choshech. Rabbi Yaakov says it's about 2 million people. Why is it Rashi? They were Rishayim. Why were they Rishayim? Because v'loy hayu rotzim latzeis. They didn't want to leave. I was always bothered by this Rashi. Put yourself in the Jews' shoes. For years and years, you're oppressed, and finally, the table turns. Your oppressor is getting oppressed. And you're sitting back, and you're enjoying every second of it. You're watching the Mitzrayim suffer, and you're loving it. And you say to yourself, this is not a bad setup. I don't mind living here if I don't have to work. How many of us would be on that side? How many of us would say, you know what, Mitzrayim is not such a bad country. This is where we live, this is what we know. They were oppressing us, they're not oppressing us anymore. Zogt Rashi, that's a Rishayim dik attitude. That's Rishayim. Why is that so bad? I think I'd be part of the 4/5. And I'm not embarrassed to admit it, I think many others would probably be also. This is all I know, it's the only world I know. What Jew knew about deserts and Israel and Eretz Israel? Nothing. So when the tide turns on my side, of course I'm going to want to stay. But Rashi is telling us a big yesod, that we as Jews have to believe in a bigger picture. We have to have bigger visions. We can't just say, oh, geschmack, now I'm not being oppressed. The Jews knew this was not the final resting place. They were told from generation upon generation, we're going to Eretz Yisrael. And now they're deciding, you know what? I'd rather stay in Mitzrayim. That's rishis. That's rishis. That's wrong. Because you know Hashem has a master plan for us, and this was not the master plan. But I hate to admit it, we're all guilty. At least I myself am for sure guilty of this. How many of us are very, very complacent where we are right now? How many of us are very happy in America, despite the political situation and the corona? But this is the only country we know of. How many of us are running to go when Mashiach comes? But that was the mistake of the Jews at that time. that they didn't see the big picture, that this is not, we don't belong here in America. This is not the final resting place. This is just another step in the very long galus. But we need to believe that when that time comes, we're going to get out of here and we're not going to look back. And we're not going to make the mistake of saying, I'd rather stay here in America. No. We're going to be ready to leave and never look back again. Despite the kindness that this country has shown us for hundreds of years. We know and we believe that this is not the ultimate place where we belong. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a different shot. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains that the Jewish people weren't so bad. It wasn't like I'm explaining it. He's almost Malam Etzchus. And he says, you know what the Jewish people said to Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe, it's too early to leave. We're supposed to be here for 400 years. You're leaving too early. Afrom Echeshbin. They weren't saying that we don't want to leave. How do we want to leave? But Moshe, you're jipping the system. On the books, Hashem said 400 years, 410 years, 420 years. It's too early. So why are they Rishayim Zot Reb Yaakov? Because Moshe was telling them, listen guys, I know. But Hashem said, because you work so hard, you get to leave early. They didn't believe in Moshe. Their lack of emunah was b'Moshe v'teirasai. They didn't believe. They made a frum echeshbin, but it was a krum echeshbin. Because they didn't listen to Moshe. When you don't listen to Torah and you don't listen to the leaders, then you're a krum thought process, not a Torah thought process. So therefore says, Reb Yaakov, they were rishoyim because they didn't listen to Moshe. When Moshe said to them, listen, Hashem said the schedule has been changed due to the fact that you suffered so hard and so long in Mitzrayim, you worked more than you should have. But then Reb Yaakov says something which we need to chazer over and over. And this year, it should mean something very, very different to us. Zogt Reb Yaakov, can you imagine what happened to Makas Choshech? 4/5 of Klal Yisrael died. Can you imagine the depression of the Jewish people? Everyone must have lost someone. How are we supposed to then go to Yitzias Mitzrayim? Turn the page, Yitzias Mitzrayim! What do you mean? We just lost 4/5 of Klal Yisrael. Says Reb Yaakov, we see from over here that prior to Geula, people are going to die. Says Reb Yaakov, that's the answer for the Holocaust. So Reb Yaakov, he says that I don't understand the Holocaust, but I know that it means the Geula is close. Because you see in this week's parasha that for some reason, prior to the Geula, people die. And it's a sign that Geula is near, says Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. So I would add, Rabbi, say this year we lost many people, and sadly we're still losing people. It can only be a sign of the Geula. Because for some reason, the way Hashem structured, again, I am not Chas V'Shalom saying that anyone who died in the Holocaust or recently is Rishoyim like in Mitzrayim. Chas V'Shalom, I would never say that. And I'm not saying that. Please don't misquote me. But Reb Yaakov said that a sign of the upcoming Geula is when people die. When we lose large chunks of Klal Yisrael. It's a simin that the Geula is Karoif. Rabbi said, you don't have to look any further than the last year. We've lost so many. Between America, Eretz Yisrael. We've lost so many Achenu B'nai Yisrael this year. It's got to be that the Geula is Karoiv. It's got to be. Like Reb Yaakov said about the Holocaust, I'm saying it now. Anytime we lose large numbers of Yidden, it's a sign. It connects to the story of this week's parasha. It means the Geula is around the corner. We need to think about it. We need to be Mitzapa L'Yeshua, Rabbi Yisrael. We need to anticipate. We need a daven. We need to think. We have a chiyuv. We have to anticipate Mashiach's arrival. I'll be honest with you, I grappled with the thought of buying a lottery ticket for the big lotto, $700 million, $800 million, whatever it is. And I'll be honest with you, I'll tell you why I didn't buy one. I thought to myself, what would happen if I win the lottery? What would happen if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me all this money? So I said to myself, I'm a very firm guy, I'll take off Meiser, I'll give tzedakah, and I'll set up my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren for 5-6 dayrus, they'll never have to worry about money. Then I said to myself, that means I believe that for 5-6 dayrus, we're going to be stuck here in America. Because when Mashiach comes, we're not going to need the money. That means I'm consciously saying that I plan on being here for 5-6 dayrus. So, where's the mitzvah of the Yeshua? I really believe that I'm going to be here for 6 generations? And I really believe that once I have money, that everything's going to be perfect? Not worth it. Again, I don't think I'm very frum, and I don't think I'm more righteous than anyone here listening. But I think it's a worthwhile thing to think about, that we have an obligation based on the Gemara to anticipate Mashiach's arrival. We need to think about the Geula. And I'm not lying to you when I say that many of us are scared of Geula. because we don't know what it brings and we don't know what it is and we don't know how it's going to look. Will there be Wi-Fi? Will there be cell phones? Will we go on birds? Will we go on planes? Al Al, Delta? There's a lot of unknown. But we got to believe it's going to be the best thing that's ever happened to us. It's going to be the greatest thing ever. And if we have that outlook and that mindset, so then we are much more anticipating, much more excited, or should be excited for the arrival of Mashiach. But Chatzkel Levenstein asks a very simple kasha. Why did Hashem have to make them die all in one time? Why couldn't it be like slowly, slowly, you know, a few die one day, a few die another? Why did it have to be 3 days, boom? So Chatzkel says, Givaldik, he says, because all these Jews grappled with this Nisayan of do I want to leave Mitzrayim or don't I want to leave Mitzrayim? And they grappled with it. But they were never had to deal with it until it was actually time to leave. This was the first time when we got to the end of Makas Choshev, it was the first time leaving Mitzrayim was a legitimate reality. Now that's a real reality, they had to ask themselves, do I want to go or don't I want to go? Till now, it was just a pipe dream. Yeah, we're going to leave Mitzrayim. Okay, fine. Yeah, I'm in, I'm out. It wasn't Lamaisa. Now the last 3 days, now we're getting to the end, now it's practical. Now they had to decide, are they in or are they out? And they decided to go out. And therefore they were punished. The Pasuk tells us it's going to be Choshech. Rashi says, what was the second reason for the Choshech? So the Jewish people can check into their friends' houses, see what's cooking by their friends, and be able to know what to borrow when they're going to leave. And they'll tell a friend, oh, I want to borrow this, that, and the other, and they'll say, sure. How do you know I have that? So you'll know what to ask because you already know what's in their house. Then the pasuk continues, that is Choshech. Go, just leave. Take the children. We need the animals. We need the animals. We're going to go, everyone. And then Moshe says an interesting line. We don't know how to serve Hashem until we get there. So Pashup Shah on the pasuk is, we don't know which animals we'll need. We got to take all the animal because we don't know what Hashem is going to ask of us. But the great Chiddush Arim, I don't know how many people know about the Chiddush Arim. The Chiddush Arim was the head of the start of the Ger Chassidus. The Chiddush Arim, I believe, had 13 children. None of them survived adulthood. The only child of the Chiddush Arim who survived adulthood was the father of the Svas Emes, and he died when the Svas Emes was a child. Just to imagine the life of the Chiddush Arim. The great Ger Rebbe. I think it's 13, either 11 or 13 children, all died. None of them survived his life. None of them survived life. The only one was the father of the Svas Emes, and he also died. He gave Meinuklach. That's how we have the Svas Emes. The Chiddush Arim had this one child who survived, who was a big Talmud Chacham. He produced the Svas Emes, and that's how we have the Ger Chassid, the Sadei Mazeh. So the Chiddush Arim said a beautiful pshat in this pasuk. We don't know. How did we serve Hashem ad be'inu Shem until we get there? Says the Chiddush Arim, we don't know if we fulfilled our purpose until we get to Shemayim. We never know if we served Hashem properly. We don't know how to serve Hashem ad be'inu Shem until we get to the Olam Ha'emes. Says the Chiddush Arim, we never know if we fulfilled our mission in this world. What was our tafkid achayim? What were we put on this world to do? Were we put on this world to do chesed? Were we put on this world to be marbitz toyer? Were we put on this world to give tzedakah? We don't know. We'll never know. We just have to try. We have to try to do what we think Hashem wants of us, demands of us, put us on this world to do. We'll never know what exactly our purpose was or our mission ad be'inu Shem until we get up to the next world. But we have to try. Says the Chiddush Arim, we have to try our best to figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us in this world. Then he goes on to say, Pari is not going to go for it, and we have the beginning of this Makkah. So what happens? Pari says, I don't want to hear from you anymore, Moshe. Get out of here. I'm done. I'm tired. I don't hear any more from you. Fine. I got another one. I got another doozy. Second. I just want to correct myself. Okay. Pasuk says, Oy nege. And after this, we're going to leave. Daber no ba'oznei ha'om. I want you to speak to the people. V'yishalu ish me'es re'er. I want you to borrow from your friend. V'isha me'es re'usan, a female from her friend. Klei kesev klei zav, to borrow silver and gold. So the first observation is, The Lashon Re'eyu. The Gemara says in Bava Kama, we make a drasha Re'eyu v'loy akum. A guy is not your friend. So why over here is he called Re'eyu? So some people say that's before Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, everyone's called Re'eyu. After Matan Torah goes, a guy is no longer called Re'eyu. But one of the Rishayim, I think it's the Chizkuni, he says something which is hard to understand. He says that after the Makos, Hayu Amitzrim Kireyim v'ayavim Yisrael. They became our friends after the Makos. After the Makos, they liked us. They became close to us. They were friends with us. And therefore, it uses the Lashon of Re'eyu. But all the Rishayim point out that the Lashon of Yishalu doesn't mean borrow, because we had absolutely no intention of returning the Kalim, because the Kalim were ours. We deserve it. We worked for it. You didn't pay us. We're not borrowing it with intention of returning it. Yishalu is the Lashon of taking, because as Rishayim say, it's payment. You never paid us. You ripped us off. You owe us the money. Give us the money that is rightfully deserved to come to us. Now, the Chassam Sofer points out that there was something unique about the Makkah of Choshech. The Makkah of Choshech was an unbelievable sign for Bnei Yisrael. Why? Because this was the first time that Bnei Yisrael really could have made a run for it. They could have left Mitzrayim and no one could have stopped them. A huge sign. If they believe in Hashem, they listen to whatever Hashem says. If they're doing it for themselves, the first time that they have freedom, run for the hills. They could have just left Mitzrayim and no one would have touched them. So that was the Nisayin of Mitzrayim. And therefore says the Satmar Rebbe, there's a Medrash. The Medrash says that the the Malachi HaMitzrayim, the angels in heaven that were on Mitzrayim's side, wanted Hashem to bring Choshech. Why? Said the Satmar Rebbe, because they thought that Choshech would be a Nisayin for Bnei Yisrael, and then Bnei Yisrael would fail. And the Bnei Yisrael would leave Mitzrayim without following Hashem's direction. Therefore, it says the Satmar Rebbe, that's why they loved. Even the Mekatre, even the supporters of Mitzrayim were happy to hear about Makas Choshech. Because they thought Makas Choshech would be an opportunity for Bnei Yisrael to sin, to not be Oymid Bnei Yisrael. And Rabbi Soloveitchik says a similar idea about Makas Bechairis. He says, why was there a tziva ve'atam loisei tu ishmi pesach beisat boiki? Why be Makas Bechairis? Did Hashem say everyone has to stay inside? So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that human beings have a tendency that when they see their oppressors finally being pained, they want to get out there. They want to fight back. They want to join in it. Hashem said, I don't want you guys out there. You stay inside. I don't want you part of the revolution. I don't want you making a rebellion. You stay inside. So here was an assign that Klal Yisrael could have finally have taken over Mitzrayim. Left on their own, Hashem says the Chassam Sofer, that was the Nisoyin. Would the Bnei Yisrael take over their own freedom, or would they wait to hear what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say? There's a lomda shakasha that Mefarshim asked, is that why did the Mitzrayim have to pay if they're going to die anyways? We have a principle called Eina, you don't pay, you don't die, you don't pay and have to die. So why did the Mitzrayim have to have both? So the answer, that's only true if a person dies Bidei Adam. But if a person dies Bidei Shemayim, like in the either in the Kriyas Yam Sof or Makas Bechairis, so then there is no such exemption like that. But it's interesting when Hashem describes the Bnei Yisrael. I'm sorry, when Hashem describes the Mitzrayim, he says, "Vayitin Hashem eschena on be'ene Mitzrayim." Hashem gave the Jewish people favor in the eyes of the Mitzrayim. Mefarshim pointed out a beautiful lesson in this week's parsha. Throughout our history, Jewish people have convinced themselves that if we just do X and Y, the Mitzrayim will like us. If we just give up religion, they'll like us. If we just intermarry, they'll like us. Give up more of religion, they'll like us. The Torah is saying it's not true. They will never like you unless Hashem makes a special miracle. Vayitin Hashem eschein on be'ini Mitzrayim. That's the only way it happens. They will not like you anymore if you try to appease them. Of course, we have to be nice and respectful. But if you think the more you act like a guy, the guy will like you better, they'll accept you into society, it's 100% not true. The more you want to be like them, they will not like you any better. Fakir, over here, the first time the Jewish people are liked by Mitzrayim is because Hashem specifically, Vayitan Hashem Eschein O'om Be'enei Mitzrayim. So the Pasuk Moshe describes what's going to happen over here. Now we get to Makas Bechairis, the final of the ten. Umeis Kol Bechar, and all the firstborn are going to die. Everyone, even the Shivcha. And there's going to be a loud cry, a scream in the land of Mitzrayim. And the Mefarshim point out that this Tzaaka is also part of the punishment. Because you know how much screaming there came from the Jewish people when their babies were being murdered? You know how much crying there was from the Jewish people when they were being whipped and back-breaking labor? So you're going to cry now also. You're going to scream also. You heard the Bnei Yisrael scream. You caused the Bnei Yisrael to scream. You're now going to scream also. One of the strongest things that people who survived the Holocaust talk about, and the Nazis themselves admitted to this, it was the screaming. The Jews that would scream when they were either about to die or they were being beaten, that screaming, the sound of screaming. So many Yidden after the Holocaust would wake up with nightmares of screaming. That was in Mitzrayim also, the screaming. And here Hashem says, I'm going to pay you back. You Mitzrayim caused that. You're now going to scream also. The Tza'aka Gedayla was a part of the punishment for all the evil that the Mitzrayim brought to Bnei Yisrael. And then we find the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. Yemer Hashem HaMoyshev El Aaron Ba'aretz Mitzrayim HaChodesh Ezel Lachem, the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, the idea of the new moon, the new month. And the Sfarno points out that the idea of the new month, Kiddush HaChodesh, is the realization that now that you're free, you're in charge of your own time. A servant, a slave, is not free. He can't stop for mincha, he can't go to the Daf Yomi Shir, he can't go to the Halacha Shir. He's bound, he has no power. Zok the Torah, now that you're free, realize you own your time. This is something we speak a lot about, not wasting time, and I am the first to admit that I struggle with this. We all waste endless amounts of time in our day. And Hashem is telling us, realize you are now in control of your time. That's the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, you control your time. And Rav Pam explained that there's two ways to make a new month, either through Re'iyah or through Cheshbon. So Rav Pam said, Al-Pidrush, Re'iyah means seeing. So many people, they see, they look at time with their eyes. Whatever's geshmak to do, they'll do. And the other one is cheshbin. You actually think about your time. You think, how much time do I have? How much every minute? Everything's oiski cheshbin. Everything is so valued. Those are the two different ways we need to look at time. We need to appreciate the time that we're given through this mitzvah. And what happens in the pasuk? Says the pasuk, Dabru al kol adas Yisrael. Both of you should speak. Well, who's doing the talking? Moshe and Aaron. So Rashi says that really only one person spoke, but they wanted to give cover to the other. The Mechilta says a different shot. There's another beautiful message from Rav Pam. Says Rav Pam, the Mechilta says that really what happened was like this. When Moshe spoke to Bnei Yisrael, Aaron sat there and was so focused on the words of Moshe, so tuned in to what Moshe had to say, and the people watched this. And they said, oh, if Aaron is listening so intently to what Moshe has to say, we must also. So Zakhtar Mechilta, when Aaron listened with such intent, so intently, so clearly, it made the Bnei Yisrael listen better. It was as if Aaron himself said it over. So Rav Pam, and this is classic Rav Pam. Rav Pam said, you know, there's such, you know, we're coming out to vacation. Many yeshivas are going to be off for a few days. So Rav Pam said, always the problem with these yeshiva bachrim, they come back to their neighbors, they go to shul, and the rabbi gets up to speak, and they don't listen to the rabbi, because they're a big lamdoyim. They learn in yeshiva whole year, so they don't need to listen to what the rabbi has to say. Said Rav Pam, it's a mistake. Because if they would value what the rabbi has to say, the Baal Batim would respect the Rav even more. If the Baal Batim saw that the yeshiva bachrim were supposed to be learning Torah whole day, say, Taka, the Rav is a big Talmud Chacham, he has what to say. They themselves would value it more. So Dr. Pam, it's wrong. He used to yell about how Yeshiva Bochum used to walk out between Mincha and Ma'ariv when the rabbi used to give a drasha, a halachashir. Give the chashivas. If you show it's chashiv, it will become chashiv to them. And I think this is so true with parents and grandparents. If you show your children something's chashiv, they'll value it also. If you show them that the Rav is chashiv and the Rebbe is chashiv and the Rashiv is chashiv, they will value it also. But if you make a little light of it, they're also not going to take it seriously. If you're going to talk when the Rav is giving a shiur, they're going to do the same thing. And if you play on your phone when the rabbi is giving the class, they're going to do the same thing. Because they don't see it's chashiv. But if you show Zaktiv Pam, if you show them that it's chashiv, then to them it will be viewed chashiv as well. Then what happens? Hashem says, the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. Torah said everyone has to take a Karban Pesach. Again, there's so much to talk about over here. But we'll have to, I guess, wait till close to the Pesach time. So what does Hashem say? V'lokchu min adam, take the blood. V'nosnu al shtei mezuzos, they put on the two doorposts. V'al hamashkef, and on top of the door. That was the tziva Hashem gave to Moshe. Yet we find later on in the Pesukim that when Moshe gives over the tziva to the Bnei Israel, he switches it over. He says, first put on the mashkev and then put it on the two sides. So the Al-Shuch says, what's this change? So the Al-Shuch says like this. When Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to put on the two sides of the door, those two side posts were representative of Aaron and Moshe. Hashem said, I want you first to put Aaron and Moshe, and then put me, Hashem, on the top. But when the Bnei Israel said it, when Moshe said it over, he put Hashem first. So the question is, what do we, Hashem values us, but we value Hashem. And that's the famous word, I heard this once from Rabbi Rasner. It's a famous word, I think it's from Chassam Sofer, that the Yom Tov of Pesach, the Torah has two names for it. Chag HaPesach and Chag HaMatzis. What's the difference? Chag HaPesach refers to the fact that Hashem skipped over the homes. Matzis refers to the fact that we left Mitzrayim without letting the dough rise. What do we call it? In the Torah, it's always referred to as Chag HaMatzis. Because Hashem wants to praise us. That we, Amcha Yisrael, left without letting the dough rise. But we want to praise Hashem. That He was Pasach Apad Bnei Yisrael. So we call it Pesach when Hashem calls it Matzis. The Medrash says that the Dam Karban Pesach was a zecher to Rakedis Yitzchak. When Hashem saw the dam on the mashkoif, on the Bnei Yisrael, this reminded Hashem of the Akedah. What exactly is the connection between the dam of the Korban Pesach and the Akedah? So the Mefarshim explained, the dam Korban Pesach was Mesiras Nefesh. Again, the sheep was the idol of the idol of the Mitzrim. Taking their idol and killing it was serious Mesiras Nefesh. The Akedah was an unbelievable Mesiras Nefesh. Hashem saw Mesiras Nefesh. When Hashem sees Mesiras Nefesh, then Klal Yisrael has unbelievable zchusim. Then Klal Yisrael has a chance for Geula. When we're Mesiras Nefesh, when we go out of our comfort zone, we push ourselves, then Hashem rewards us with unbelievable, terrific Geula. So the Pasuk says, HaMitzvah Karban Pesach. In the middle, when it discusses the Karban by the Matzahs, it says, Ushmartim es HaMatzahs. So the Chazal tells us, Ushmartim es HaMatzahs, Al Tikri Matzahs el HaMitzvahs. You should guard the mitzvahs. Mitzvah abol yodecho al tach mitzena. Don't let the mitzvahs become chametz. Don't let the mitzvahs sit. A mitzvah comes your way, jump on it right away. But Rav Pam had another interpretation of this pasuk. We find the word v'shamarta means to anticipate. Shamar v'aviv shamar esadavar. Yaakov waited to see what's going to be with the dreams. Anticipate a mitzvah. Be excited about mitzvahs. Don't just do them if they come. Be excited. Anticipate a mitzvah's coming down my way. I want to be ready for it. Rav Pam used to say, how many people eat too much at Shabbos day Suda in the winter? And then there's no room for Shal Shudas. Says Rav Pam, anticipate Shabbos Shal Shudas. I'm not going to eat so much. One less spoonful of challen so I can eat Shal Shudas like a mensch. Anticipate mitzvahs. Be excited about mitzvahs. Look forward to mitzvahs. Vishamarta doesn't just mean to guard them and protect them, but it also means to anticipate, to be excited about the mitzvahs. And then we have the story of Makas Bechayrus. Pasuk says, "Vayhi b'chatzir ha'layla, v'Hashem hikra kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim." Vayokam Pare gets up. Zagrashi mimi tasa. He gets up from his bed. This is the famous makar for Uncle Moshe's song, Pare in pajamas in the middle of the night. Rashi in this week's parsha. Now, points out Absalom Kluger. How on earth can Pare go to bed? Lel Yitzchias Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu has been right 9 out of 9 times. Tonight he's told him he's going to die. How foolish can Paroi be to go to bed? Zogt Achreinim, because Paroi was so convinced he was right. He mamash thought Moshe is meaningless. He thought he's a god. He thought he can outdo HaKadosh Baruch. Therefore, Moshe Paroi had the audacity to go to sleep at night, thinking that nothing's going to harm him. Just to think, at Heichem Agia, you can stick your eye in Kaviyachul HaKadosh Baruch and say, I know better, I'm stronger, I'm smarter. And then we all know the story of Makas Bechayrus and the follow-ups and the story of Klal Yisrael leaving with the bread not even rising. What's the message of Klal Yisrael leaving? We were in Mitzrayim for 200 years. Hashem, you couldn't have spared us another few minutes? Let the bread rise. So the answer is Yeshua Hashem Kerefai. Like this, we're out. The miracle, the salvation comes in a second, a flash. No time limit to it. But I always thought there's another message over here. The message for Bnei Yisrael was an intro to Judaism. Klal Yisrael, Hashem is going to ask things of you that you don't ask questions. Now, let's go. Boom. It doesn't make sense. No, that's it. We got to go. It's Shabbos. It's 4:30. It's Shkia. That's it. All work stops. I'm in the middle of a job. I'm in the middle of that. No. Done. Finished. It's not about when you're ready. It's when Hashem says, game's over. Hashem says it's Shabbos. Hashem says it's Yom Tov. Hashem says this. We follow whatever we're told, whether it's convenient or inconvenient for us. Leaving Mitzrayim would have been much more convenient if we had food. Yes, of course. But Judaism is not about convenience. It's not about what's best for us. It's about fulfilling the Ratzon Hashem. Then ultimately, we close the parasha out with the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. I actually had the privilege of being at a Pidyon HaBen today, which is why the show is an hour later. So it's a great, great time to have a Pidyon HaBen. But there's a very important message that the Alter from Kelm said about Pidyon HaBen. The Alter from Kelm wrote a letter to Rothschild, the great philanthropist. And he told him, he said, you know what the goddess of Pidyon HaBen is? Is these Bechayrim were miracles. They were Kiddush Hashem. Because Hashem killed all the non-Jewish firstborn, and the Jewish firstborn lived. So they're a chevtz of Kiddush Hashem. And what happens to them? They have such Kiddush. So said the Alter from Kelm, if for just being an object used for Kiddush Hashem, Hashem values you so much, Koshkin, if you yourself are an act of Kiddush Hashem, every time we're Mekadosh Shmoy Barabim, every time we praise Hashem, we show the world what normal Orthodox Jews look like. We're honest in business, and we're caring, and we're respectful, and we're kind to others. That's a Kiddush Hashem. That's a chetz of Pidyon HaBen. The whole reason why Hashem loves the firstborn is because the firstborn was a vehicle to produce Kiddush Hashem. So if we ourselves go out, and again, the Bechayim didn't do this on purpose. The Bechayim didn't choose this role. By default, they became a utensil that created Kiddush Hashem. Said the Alter from Kelm, but if we go out of our ways and actively do Kiddush Hashem, consciously do Kiddush Hashem, you can only imagine the great reward that Kosh Baruch will have for us. And we'll close with the famous Ramban, Rabbi Yisai. You can't learn Parshas Boy without this Ramban. The last Ramban at the end of Sefer Parshas Boy reads the following. And from these unbelievable miracles that we learn about, Adam Moide Benisim Hanistarim, it makes a person admit to thank Hashem for the hidden miracles. Shehem Yisoid HaTorku, that is the fundamentals of all of Judaism. Shein la'adam chelik b'tayras Moshe Rabbeinu. You have no portion in Torah. You have no connection to Torah, says the Ramban. At sheyamin shekol devarenu mikarenu, until you come to the realization and you believe in the depths of your heart that all that happens kulam nisim, everything is a miracle. Ein b'hem teva umin hogashloim. There is no such thing as nature and regular runnings of the world. Bein b'rabim, bein b'yochid. Whether individual or for the mass. El imyasa amitzvah yatzichenu scharoi. If you do good things happen. V'myavar aleim yachirusenu onshoi. Hakol b'gzeiras elyon. Says the Ramban, the message of the miracles is that nothing in this world is natural. Everything is directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pidyon HaBen itself represents that. Person has a healthy baby boy, everything runs smoothly, and that they have to be makir tov to Kadosh Baruch Hu. When things go normal and regular and no crazy stories, just waking up in the morning is a reason to be makir tov to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything that happens, the miracles teach us that everything is really a miracle. Nothing is just by chance, because it happens to be that way, because that's the way it was yesterday, because that's what the doctor says it's supposed to be. No! Everything that happens in this world is orchestrated specifically by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bein B'yochid, Bein B'tzibur. And that says the Ramban, if we don't believe in that, we have no chelik in Torah as Moshe. If we want to have a connection to Torah and to Judaism, we need to remind ourselves that everything that happens in our life, public and private, is orchestrated specifically by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no nature, no, that's the way it goes, all specifically orchestrated. And that is the lessons that we take away from this week's parasha. From the unbelievable miracles of Yitzhak Mitzrayim and the miracles of the Makkah is to remind ourselves that everything is a miracle and a blessing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.